We are required to elect an acting chairperson. So before we proceed, I will do a roll call to determine whether we're correct and whether members are all on the platform. So I will call the names of members as on to verify their presence. Mr. Mbuyane? Mr. Mbuyane is on the platform. I will proceed to Ms. Mwatse.
Thank you very much, Andres, and good morning, colleagues. I'm present.
Mr. Mbuyane? Mr. Mbuyane?
Andre, I'm just getting into a list, but I am here, Dean.
Thank you very much. I'm present.
Thanks, Mr. Malamati and Mr. Mbuyane, both present. Ms. Mutahung?
Good morning, Andre. I'm present.
Mr. Thring?
Good morning,
is on the platform.
Good morning, present, thank you.
Mr. Mulder?
Good morning, Andre. I'm present. I haven't seen you in a long time. I see you went grey. Andre, I just want to report that I have got a doctor's appointment approximately at 10:30. If I could be excused, please.
Noted, Mr. Mulder. Prince Burns, Namashe.
Molo Sano, Namalungu. My voice is hoarse. I had a flu over the weekend.
No problem, Mr. Prince Namashe. Mr. Cuthbert?
Morning, Andre.
Mr. Fierce has indicated he's present. He may still be in the lift. Just before we start proceedings, on behalf of the Secretariat, I would like to express our sincere condolences to Mrs. Hermans and her family for the passing of her son over the weekend. Our thoughts and prayers are with her and her family during this difficult time. Now, in order to elect an acting chairperson in terms of Rule 159, I call for nominations for the position of acting chairperson in the absence of Mrs. Hermans until she returns. Can I have a nomination for the position of acting chairperson? Ms. Mutahung?
Thanks, Chair. I nominate the name of Honorable Mbuyane to be our acting chair.
Thank you. Okay, the seconder, Ms. Mwatse.
Thank you very much, Andre. I second the nomination.
Thank you. We have a nomination and a seconder for the position of acting chair. Are there any other nominations? There being no other nominations, I declare Mr. Mbuyane duly elected as acting chairperson until the chairperson returns, and I'll request Mr. Mbuyane to take the chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Andre. Good morning, colleagues. Sending condolences as well. On behalf of the acting chair to the chair of the committee, we are saying condolences to her and the entire family during these trying times. Colleagues and committee, you will pardon me, I'm in transit to Cape Town. But I will try to execute the task that you have just nominated me to do. And we will be quickly dealing with this letter so that we are not delaying, even as Bar Melda will be covered by the half-term meeting. So today, colleagues, we will be dealing with the briefing by the PTIC on the status of the implementation. Can we get the agenda slide, please? Yes, I think we have dealt with all these matters of apologies and support. We are now at the briefing by the TTIC in the status of the implementation of the following legislation: the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act, National Credit Amendment Act, Legal Metrology Act, Protection of Investment Act, and briefing by the TTIC on the status of the review process regards to consumer protection act and the national framework. So I don't know who's from the department, but I think the deputy minister, Honorable Majole, will give it to you so that we introduce the presentation and also the administration that they're supposed to present. Thank you very much.
Chair, before we hand over to the Deputy Minister, can we just have a move and second for the adoption of the agenda?
On the agenda?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought we dealt with all these things. Because I see the agenda is not here. Can we have a proposal and a second for the adoption?
Comrade Mr. Malamati, Honorable.
Thank you very much. Thank you,
Mr.
Chair.
Malamati.
I propose to adopt the agenda.
Okay, there's a proposal that we adopt the agenda by Honorable Malamecha. Any seconder? I don't see any hands.
Chair, Ms. Mutahun, Chair.
Ms. Mutahun?
Thanks, Chair. I second the adoption of the agenda.
Thank you very much. The agenda has been duly adopted. As we have outlined here to say, we will be dealing with the briefing by the DTIC on the status of the review process with regard to the consumer protection and the national campaign. And also some of the legislations that we have. I don't know who was presenting the secretariat. Will you assist us? The DM in connected. Over
Chair,
to you, dear.
Chair, the Deputy Minister is on the platform, Chair.
Okay. Deputy Minister, Honorable Majola, you can take it. And the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Acting Chairperson, Honorable Mbuyani. And good morning to the honorable members of the committee. We'll be presenting to you in two parts. Firstly, the progress with regard to the implementation of legislation, and the second part will deal with the review of legislation. Honorable Chair, can I take this opportunity to also join you on behalf of our department to convey our condolences to the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Ms. Hemmings, let us say that our thoughts and prayers are with her during this time and her family. So we have the DTIC team here led by the acting Director General Shabir Khan. We also have representatives from our different entities who deal with the different pieces of legislation that we'll be presenting to you today. So without wasting time, Chair, because we have a fairly lengthy presentation, I would like to hand over to the acting Director General to firstly introduce the team from the DTIC and our different entities who are present today. And then, with your permission, I'll ask him to lead us in the presentation. I know that the different officials from the department will deal with different parts of the legislation that we'll be presenting. So the acting Director General will take us through that. And so with your permission, Chair, please I'll hand over to the acting Director General. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Acting DG. you can take us through the presentation. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister Majola. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, staff of Parliament, and the colleagues on the platform. Chair, I'm going to quite quickly introduce the delegation from the department and its entities. Whilst I'm doing that, I'll also kindly request Ms. Solofele Moshi to load the presentation on the screen, and I'll also then introduce the presenters who will take us through the various aspects of the presentation. In the delegation this morning, we do have Dr. Evelyn Masocha from our Consumer and Regulatory Branch, as well as Dr. Zandile Brown. We also do have Ms. Nikki Kruger from our Trade Unit. We also do have Ms. Elizabeth van Rienen, Dr. Shenge Dimana, Dr. Anna-Marie Lotter. We also do have colleagues from the National Consumer Commission, led by the Company Secretary, Mr. Joseph Sololo, the Head of Legal Services, Mr. Jabulani Mbeje, and the Legal Advisor, Mr. Imran Mahoro. From the National Credit Regulator, we are joined by the Legal Senior Advisor, Ms. Ntupango Maholeho. From the NRCS, we do have the Acting CEO, Ms. Rebecca Ramcharan, the Acting CEO, Mr. Duncan Mutengwe, the Head of Risk and Strategy, Mr. Edward Matembe, and the Acting GM for Legal Metrology, Mr. Yako Manevek. From CIPC, we have Ms. Nomonde Mamela and Dr. Tandanani Swele. And lastly, from the National Gaming Board, we have the Chief Compliance Officer, Mr. Nkunse Mashemate. Chair, Sulu, if you can pass me, take us to the next slide of the presentation. Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, the different presenters that will cover the various aspects of the slides. Dr. Evelyn Masocha, the DDG for Consumer and Corporate Regulations, will cover the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act, the National Gambling Act, the Consumer Protection Act, as well as the National Credit Amendment Act. Ms. Nikki Kruger, who is the Chief Director in our Trade Unit, will cover the provide a progress update on the Protection of the Investment Act. And lastly, Dr. Shenge Dimane, who is the Chief Director in Industrial Competitiveness and Growth Branch, he will provide an update on the Legal Metrology Act. Chairperson, with your permission, I will then hand over to Dr. Evelyn Masocha, who will then take us to the first part of the presentation. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, DDG, and you continue with the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the Acting DG, to the Deputy Minister, to the parliamentary staff, to all my colleagues in the department, including Legal Services, the Chief Director, Ms. Ndogo Zokamba, and her team, and all the entities who are here with us today, and everyone in the platform, good morning. Thank you for this opportunity for the department to present on the progress update on different sets of legislation from the review and to the implementation. So I will...
DG? I think the DDG is fading. I don't know what's the network.
Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay.
I think we must just get the right spot for you so that you can be able to hear you.
Oh, all right, Chair. There's a background sound, Chair. I'm not sure if someone's mic is on in the platform. I'm hearing a background sound. If it's possible that everyone can also mute their mic. All right. Thank you.
So I will be presenting on the status of implementing the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act, the National Credit Amendment Act, and then the review of the Consumer Protection Act and the National Gambling Act. My colleagues will cover the other areas as indicated by the acting DG. And Chair, in the presentation, given the time constraints, it's quite a detailed presentation on the legislation. However, what I will then do is to speak at the, on the high level about where the legislation is and cover the updates. And not so much on the provisions that are in the legislation. So that, because I'm going to cover four areas, so it might be very detailed and it might require more time. So I'm going to try to be as brief as possible, but covering the gist of what this presentation is about. On this slide, Chair, on the National Gambling Act, is just to provide an overview of the legislative processes and the status of where we have been on the legislative framework of the national gambling legislation. It started in 1995 with the WIA Commission that recommended the strict regulation of gambling. And then we had the National Gambling Act of 1996 that was introduced, and it also established the National Gambling Board. Then we had the Act again reviewed for 2004, where we then had the National Gambling Policy Council that was established in that Act. The Policy Council is a very important coordination platform between provinces and national government on the gambling mandate because of the concurrent jurisdiction of gambling. And then we had the National Gambling Amendment Act in 2008. This is a very important piece of legislation that was passed into law dealing with remote gambling and from an interactive gambling perspective. This legislation currently has not come into effect. It was never promulgated, but it is in the statute books. Then we had the review of the whole gambling environment by doing a Gambling Review Commission report in 2010 that made several policy recommendations on gambling in the country. At the time, one of the concerns was about the proliferation of gambling and the direction government needed to take to look at gambling as one of the sectors in the economy, and plus the balancing of the social harms of gambling in society, plus ensuring there's a regulatory framework that is sound and in line with best practices. So that commission informed the policy processes that followed after that, where we had the policy on national gambling, and we also had the National Gambling Amendment Bill that was introduced into Parliament in 2018. So that was the subsequent processes. It was introduced. Following that, it went through the parliamentary process until where we are now, where it is in the mediation process. So when I go into the other slides, I'm not going to go into much detail because I've covered most of it, the background around that slide. So this slide is very important because it talks to the role the WIAN Commission played in setting the key principles around gambling in the country. So it informed the policy direction, and those principles remain critical even to date. One of the main emphasis of this commission's recommendations was around the protection of society from the overstimulation of gambling through the limitation of gambling opportunities. Also in terms of ensuring that there's a strict control and supervision of the industry through providing a regulatory framework that protects players and ensuring that there's integrity and fairness of the industry. And in terms of norms and standards, it was important that there is uniformity and harmonization of policy and legislation at all levels of government, and there's proper coordination. And very importantly for the economy, the issue of the generation of revenue and taxes for provincial governments and for good causes. And the National Gambling Mandate is also seen as important in terms of driving part of the economy and ensuring that the historically disadvantaged benefited also from this important piece of legislation. Overall, the intention is to promote economic growth, development, and employment. So now one moves to the National Gambling Amendment Bill. as the most recent work that was undertaken by the department and parliament on the national gambling legislation. To just give a background here, the bill that was introduced was comprehensive. It was comprehensive in the sense that it addressed many issues beyond just looking at the governance administrative issues. One of the areas that we're going to look at was how to the oversight of the horse racing industry, as an example. It had many other provisions, but however, because of the timing when it was introduced and the fact that Parliament was about to rise for the next administration, it was reduced in terms of focusing on the core governance related issues. I will take the committee through those issues briefly, just to ensure that there's a sense of what the bill aimed to achieve in broad terms. So in terms of the purpose of the bill, one of the main critical areas of focus was the reconfiguration or the restructuring of the National Gambling Board to a national gambling regulator led by a CEO. As many may be aware, the board of the National Gambling Board was dissolved in 2014 due to governance and other related issues that led to that decision. And then the entity went into administration, overseen by the leader there as an administrator. And so because of the importance of ensuring that the situation is amended or corrected, there was a need to ensure that this issue is addressed in terms of corporate governance. So it's one of the key provisions that we developed in the bill. Another area was the provision of the automatic forfeiture of unlawful winnings to the National Gambling Regulator. Currently, there's a procedure for the forfeiture of unlawful winnings. That is quite a bit cumbersome, and it requires procedures like involving the courts. And this was meant to simplify the processes and also to ensure that the winnings are not forfeited to the government coffers, but to the National Gambling Regulator to assist with their revenue generation for combating issues of illegal gambling and other related issues. And then the key one was that with the National Gambling Policy Council, issues of the quorum have become very critical because of the issue of harmonization, ensuring that there's national norms and standards in the country. It's important that the national and provinces are in alignment when it comes to critical gambling-related issues. So the quorum of the National Gambling Policy Council is a very critical measure in terms of ensuring that critical decisions are taken. What has happened over the years has been that a quorum has been an issue that has affected key policy decisions, harmonization across the national and provincial gambling boards. So this has led to challenges of certain decisions being delayed, and over long periods of time, there will not be a quorum. Efforts will be taken to ensure that in meetings we have the right numbers of MECs, but then at the last minute, meetings will either be postponed, cancelled, or there will not be a quorum. Then issues will only be noted. And this has affected decisions related to the national gambling mandate. So the bill sought to address this issue by proposing a solution to address that. And another area was the extension of the National Central Electronic Monitoring System to other modes of gambling. Currently, it only focuses on the limited payment machines sector. And it does not talk to other modes of gambling like the casinos and so on. So the intention was to ensure that it's broadened to improve the information collection in terms of gambling statistics, gambling information, ensuring that there is more oversight over this and working collaborations with the provinces to ensure that there's the information is sound, and then there's more in terms of the profiling of the gambling industry in the country. There's more value add to the process. So that's one of the key recommendations that were provided in this amendment bill. And also to enhance the powers of the National Inspectorate to curb illegal gambling activities. The inspectorate in gambling requires some attention, and the provisions in the bill was to ensure that there's more capacity provided for inspectorate by involving the National Gambling Board to work very closely with the provinces, but also giving the board more powers to be able to take certain actions whenever there is a need. So this is one of the areas that was is in the bill for further consideration. In this slide, it's mainly processes, just to talk to the timeline. The process started in 2015 when there was a national gambling policy that was published for broader consultation. Other processes culminated, including the cabinet processes, the public participation, where the bill was made, when it was finalized for publication to the public, and the different processes that were undertaken. So this is more of a procedure kind of a slide, similar to the next slide where focus was on when it was introduced in Parliament, the briefings that were undertaken by the department, the public hearings that happened in 2018, and the whole process, even including when it was adopted by the National Assembly and then taken to the National Council of Provinces in 2019. And in 2021, it was then referred to mediation because of challenges with some of the voting with the provinces. So the bill was revived in the sixth administration, and from its revival, there were further consultations in provinces. It was in the SILEP committee, the SILEP committee on trade and industry, economic development, small business development, tourism, employment and labor. It was there after that duration. And in 2021, December, following the report transferred to the NCOP, it was then referred to mediation. I'm going to then talk just briefly on concerns raised about the bill. I will pick the ones that were the most critical ones, and then move to the way forward and the update, the main update of the bill. So in terms of the establishment of the National Gambling Regulator, this was a very contentious issue, especially for many provinces who are of the view that they either need to have a board where the CEO can account to the board, but to have a regulator with the CEO is giving too many powers to an individual, and there is a need for a board. So there was that conflict around board versus individual CEO. From the department side, our recommendation was that based on the trends and developments with boards and governance issues and some of the challenges that we have experience with the lessons and learned over time, we were of the view that even based on the entity rationalization research that was done, that a board that is led by or an entity led by a regulator, a commissioner or CEO is effective, and we have examples of such entities in the department. So that's where the point was coming from as well. So we were not of the view that the board will, the regulator will fail based on the fact that it's only a CEO, because we have commissioners running entities without boards, the CEO doing the same. But it was a contentious issue. The next one is the National Central Electronic Monitoring System. On this one, there were concerns raised that there is already capacity in provinces. Operators are working with provinces. Some provinces indicated they also wanted to have their own NSEMs. Currently, it's a national capacity, national mandate for the NGB provided in the Act, focusing on the limited payout machines. So we thought, because it's already a mandate of the NGB, it can be extended to ensure they have more capacity in terms of regulating, monitoring systems, and having an oversight over gambling-related information, being able to see if there are challenges. And also, we thought it will also assist with the profiling of the country in terms of being a destination of credible gambling practices, gambling information, and so on. But it is one of the contentious issues that was not supported by some of the provinces. And then now, to come to the National Gambling Policy Council, this one is one of the most contentious ones. The provision in the bill proposed that MECs, when a decision is taken, 5 MECs are required plus the minister to make a decision. That has proven to be a problem because there will not be enough MECs in the meeting. We will follow up, send out invitations, last minute there are cancellations or they don't come. So because of that, we realized this is affecting the norms and standards. So the implication of this was bigger, even though one can say, but it's just a meeting. Why don't we do round robins and so on? Even the round robin option was was explored. It has not worked. We will not get feedback and so on. So many options have not worked. The only thing that we thought might have, which was a bit stronger, might have an impact, was to ensure that even the first meeting, there's no quorum. In the second meeting, the number of MECs that are there can make a decision. And the decision then will have implications for other provinces. So this was highly contentious. It was opposed. There were concerns about it to say, but no, this cannot be the case. So this is where we are on this one, one of the areas that was not supported by the provinces. Likewise with the National Inspectorate, to say that as it is functional right now, it's sufficient. The National Gambling Board does not have to get too involved, as we were trying to empower and to support. It has also contested this National Inspectorate issue. So in terms of the voting, the final mandate, two provinces abstained from voting, Eastern Cape and the KZN. And then there were provinces that voted against the bill. There were four, and that is the Free State, Gauteng, Northwest and Western Cape. Those who favored voted in favor were the Northern Cape, Northwest and Mpumalanga. And so overall, the bill was not supported in general. It got some support, but not sufficient enough to be able to be passed to be supported or passed or adopted by the NCOP. So in terms of the where we are now, the bill currently is in the mediation. It was referred on the 14th of December, 2021. There was a meeting scheduled in June. However, that meeting was cancelled. So the department awaits the next processes based on the scheduling of the mediation committee and also based on how the parliamentary processes unfold. Then we will be participating in that order. So I moved then to the Consumer Protection Act of 2008. This legislation came into effect in 2011, in March 2011. It was replacing the laws that were repealed. They include the Unfair Business Practices Act, the Sale and Service Matters Act, the Trade Practices Act of 1976. The legal framework at the time was very complicated. Consumers were burdened by unfair practices. There was no transparency, policies were not clear, there was no proper redress. And so generally, the market was constrained. Access to information was not clear in terms of your rights, what happens with your purchases and when there are challenges and so on. And there was a need to align to best practices globally and ensuring that consumer rights are prioritized and there's consumer protection. So the CPA seeks to protect consumers in their day-to-day dealings with retailers, suppliers, and other businesses. So the Act provides comprehensive consumer redress for consumers and established the National Consumer Commission. On this slide, I won't go into the details of it. It's just to indicate that the Act is so comprehensive as a law of general application. It promotes an economic environment that supports and strengthens the culture of consumer rights and responsibilities, business innovation, and enhanced performance. It promotes a fair, accessible, and sustainable marketplace for consumer products and services. It addresses issues of marketing of products, how consumers must deal with products that are not properly dealt with in terms of safety and defects. It prohibits certain unfair marketing and business practices. It also improves access to quality information that is necessary for consumers to make informed decisions. And also issues of safety and ensuring that they are protected from hazards. It provides for associations and other platforms that can be used by consumers for redress, and also ensuring that consumers participate in decision-making processes. So it provides for several rights for consumers. So in terms of our role, since it has come into effect, it has been several years. We normally review legislation after 5 years to ensure that any implementation challenges or policy issues are addressed and there's a review of policy. So we have conducted a regulatory impact assessment that was finalized in 2021 as part of kickstarting that process as a department to look at where are the constraints since implementation. Some of the issues that we included was informed by issues raised by the public, the engagements we've had, and feedback mechanisms that we received from time to time. So we addressed the following key areas. In the next slides, it's more details, but I'm going to focus on this one also in the interest of time. And bearing in mind that this is a process, the issues are not cast in stone. We are still going to look at different policy options. We are still going to engage with stakeholders, experts to check where are the main areas of consideration. So this is just to indicate that this is what we have done so far, and we are still looking into the issues to see what are the best options for the recommendations for policy. So one of the areas is the hierarchy of consumer complaints in the Consumer Protection Act. This has been an area of confusion for many consumers in terms of where is the first port of call when you make a consumer complaint, and which platforms can they access, whether it's the provincial offices, whether it's the NCC or the consumer court. So there has been that. The S does provide for this. However, we've noticed that we've been receiving many complaints about where do I start, who can help me, I don't get enough support, what happens if my matter is it has not been dealt with over time, what happens if this, what happens if it cannot be dealt with further, and so on. So it's one area that we looked at. The other area was the mandate of the NCC in terms of consumer complaints handling, in terms of the extent of their involvement, where they fit in the hierarchy of complaints, or policy options of improving how complaints can be dealt with from a regulator's perspective. And then we looked at the impact of the misalignment of provincial consumer laws with the Consumer Protection Act and the general failure in the exercise of cooperative concurrent jurisdiction, because this is an area of concurrency as well between provinces and national. We looked at how best can provinces and national work together to ensure that consumers get the best protection and support and their rights are exercised. We also looked at the alternative dispute resolution measures available and how to effectively utilize them and the different ombuds schemes that can be improved, and issues around warranty provisions, how to improve areas of warranty to strengthen those provisions. Then the issues of product recall, as you are aware of, several times you'll hear that there are products that are being recalled from shelves. What are the procedures? Is the act clear on those? Where are the loopholes? And also on the issues of the genetically modified organisms. There's a lot of work here to be done with other entities and other regulators who are also addressing the same mandate. We're looking at how best do we then as a department participate in this and ensuring that the policy gaps that may be out there, we take them into cognizance. We also looked at issues of illicit goods from the CPA point of view. Do we have sufficient provisions? Should we include more provisions? What are the options? What are the recommendations? And also there has been a call for an ombudsman on the franchise industry. So we are looking at the possibility of an ombud around the franchise industry. So the research was also assisting in that regard. Many other issues can also be brought forward. The intention is to ensure that we take this work forward for the Consumer Protection Act. So I'm going to skip most of this. These are just slides that talk to the detail of the RIA, the regulatory study itself. So in terms of the review, we are looking at starting that policy process. The other work we are looking into is the industry codes that have been approved by the minister for the motor industry and the consumer goods codes, and they are being reviewed also for further amendments. And we have received advice from some experts who are of the view that the Act as it stands should not be amended now. They are of the view that there's a need to implement it further before it's amended. So there's also that view that even though it's been more than 5 years, we can review the legislation, but there are those of the view, given the status of the law, we don't have to review it now. I mean, to amend, it still needs to be further implemented. And then on the timeshare legislation or timeshare work, There was an investigation that was done by the NCC, I think between 2018-19, if I'm not mistaken, they did that. There was that report and recommendations. We have since been working with them to look at possible regulations around the time-sharing legislation. However, just to add, we, given the legislation that deals with timeshare and some of the implications, we've been looking at where best can this legislation be in terms of the relevant other departments. So the department currently is exploring migrating this law to the relevant department that deals with issues related to tourism or issues of timeshare as part of their core mandate. So it's one of the areas that we thought we can also highlight as work that we are undertaking. But that work, the NCC has found a way around it in terms of addressing some of the complaints that comes with the timeshare industry-related issues and so on. Now I'm moving to the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act of 2013. So in terms of the background to this legislation, the initial bill was introduced to the National Assembly in 2010. It undertook the parliamentary processes, and then it was passed by both houses and sent to the president in December of 2011. And then it was returned to the National Assembly by the president due to reservation about its constitutionality. One of the issues was about the consultation with the National House of Traditional Leaders that needed to be addressed. And then subsequently it was passed into law, and it was passed by both houses in November of 2013, and it became an act of law in December 2013. So the department then was also trying to finalize the regulations, the DTIC. However, at the same time, the Minister of Science and Technology at the time introduced the Protection, Promotion, Development and Management of Indigenous Knowledge System Bill to the National Assembly. And because of this process, the legislation are similar. The one for the DSI is broader in terms of issues of indigenous knowledge, traditional knowledge, and the focus of the one by the intellectual property law is more on intellectual property. So the processes had to be put on hold to address the alignment between the two departments. Just as an update, in 2017, their portfolio committee also called the department and the DSI to talk to the alignments between the two laws, and there were areas identified as of areas of synergy. We came to the portfolio committee in 2020 March to also present with the Department of Science and Innovation on the alignment between the two laws and how the implementation was going to take place. So just as a brief background, I'm not going to go into too much detail on the gist or the content of the legislation. Indigenous knowledge is critical in the economic development and development of the cultural industry in South Africa. This law aims to recognize and protect certain manifestations of indigenous knowledge. We all know that our country has a rich heritage of culture that impacts on communities and our society. And the indigenous knowledge systems, they deal with research, development, promotion, education, and strengthening of the regime of indigenous knowledge. The law as it stands amends four existing IP laws. They include the Copyright Act, Performance Protection Act, Trademarks Act, Designs Act, and they are also amended in the certain forms to address the traditional knowledge protection. The law currently is not in force. It was never promulgated. There are no regulations concerning it. And one of the areas that we've identified with our regulator, the CIPC, is that we will contribute in this work, working in close collaboration with the Department of Science and Innovation. We will focus on the IP registration. And the regulator is available for this work when it comes to the registration of IP, when it comes to indigenous knowledge. But we also acknowledge that the law by the Department of Science and Innovation is broad enough, a sui generis law, which has got more options in terms of traditional knowledge beyond IP. and we support that process. And the institutions that we had in the Intellectual Laws Amendment Act, they will be addressed by the other department because of the similarities. And some of the ones that we had were seen to be problematic in terms of their practical implications. For example, the National Trust and how the National Trust coincides with communities. And in terms of other issues, there are experts who are of the view that this law needs to be repealed because of the soundness of some of its legal context. For example, issues around originality, issues around certain definitions. So there has been contestations around that in terms of how is it going to be implemented when it's not clear in terms of its implications on different aspects, like, for example, in the copyright area. So we as the department and sort of legal opinion in 2020, looking at the different areas of the laws and where are the challenges and the gaps, and they did indicate several issues of concern. For example, how this law will benefit communities directly. How do you deal with originality issues in an area that has been there over centuries? So they identified conceptual legal context issues that are of concern. So it's an area that we're still working on as a department. We just thought we should share this in terms of what we have done so far. So there was that legal opinion. We are still in the process of consulting with our minister further on what is the best approach. But then with our regulator, we contributed to the draft regulations in 2021 by the Department of Science and Innovation. We are in consultation with them in terms of how best do we work together to ensure that they can refer IP registration related issues to us. But we still need to get into the hurdle of how do we develop the appropriate regulations for this indigenous knowledge from the IPLA, from this legislation side. How do we do that? Because we still need to do regulations. There are experts who are of the view we cannot just do regulations. We need to correct the act first. So there are implications and some areas we still need to iron out. But the area we've carved out for the department and CIPC is around indigenous knowledge registration. The form of it is something that we still need to review. But the feedback to the committee and members, honorable members, is that we are working on this. We are still engaging with the minister. We are still engaging with the Department of Science and Innovation. We are participating in their processes. We commented on their draft regulations. And we can also be allowed maybe later on to come back with a proper feedback of how far we are, because we are still in those consultations. They are still working on their side. As far as I recall, they're still finalizing regulations. I'm subject to correction, but I was also trying to consult with them now to see how best do we still align. But we can come back later with more detailed information of where we are with them, even with the decision of the minister around the context of the law. The area that was highlighted by some experts was that just repeal the legislation, but that decision, we have not reached that decision yet. So it's something that we can come back with more clarity about in the near future. So the CIPC is the entity that is responsible, is the entity that we will work closely with in this area of work. But overall, the law is not in place, it's not in effect. There's still work we are undertaking, there are still consultations underway, but we work very closely with the Department of Science and Innovation on this work. The National Credit Amendment Act of 2019. So this legislation was passed into law in 2019 by the president. We did come to the portfolio committee to present on the possible action plan of implementation. The initial plan was to have implementation in 2021, beginning of 2021, to start with the implementation. This law provides for debt intervention. It's a form of debt review process. It introduces procedures for the National Credit Regulator and the National Consumer Tribunal on how to rearrange debt of over-indebted vulnerable consumers who earn a particular threshold of income, 7,500 as a maximum, with unsecured debt of 50,000 or less. It was intended to address the gap in the market where consumers are not able to fit in the debt review process and other insolvency-related measures that are available to more sophisticated consumers who can access certain resources and information. And it involves debt rearrangement. It has procedures of how to suspend a debt, how to extinguish a debt, the role of the courts, the role of the tribunal, and it's a procedure of how to rearrange debt overall. And it also provides for offenses and criminalizing certain behaviors that are currently affecting consumers who are highly indebted and are not protected in the market. So as a department, since it was passed into law, what happened in the very same year, we started consulting with key stakeholders. We consulted with the banks, the retail sector through their federation. We consulted our entities, the NCR and the National Consumer Tribunal, because we were concerned about the implementation of the Act in terms of its implication, given the feedback we've received from the public, from the experts, and also from the industry. Then we undertook to come up with a blended and cost-effective approach to the implementation of the Act. So that process started of engagement. It continued in September of 2020. It was affected by the pandemic because of the reprioritization. And the relevant stakeholders were then requested to submit their proposals of how best to proceed with the legislation and implementation of it from infrastructure, hurdles in the Act. And what came up was that there are challenges that industry raised that needed to be taken into consideration, and they proposed some amendments before implementation, and we then had to consider those issues further. And so I'm just going to move quickly on some of the slides. And so what we then decided then as a department was that maybe we need to pause instead of implementation cost and consider other considerations in terms of the implications of implementing the Act. So in the process, there was funding that was provided by National Treasury. They provided 11.4 million for initial infrastructure development around the Act. That was also the funds were then allocated to the two entities, NCR and NCT. So in 2019 as well, there was a regulatory impact assessment that was done, and it was also tabled in Parliament. It highlighted some areas of concerns and the unintended consequences for vulnerable consumers. So in the processes of consultations, we also had this study at the back of our minds to say we need to be mindful of some of the concerns that were raised. And then in terms of the processes, what we are now doing as a department is we are looking at amending the Act to address some of the constraints that were identified with the implementation of the Act by the consultations that we undertook. So we will be looking at amending it in some few areas before we undertake the actual implementation. So then I will then request my colleague to talk to the Protection of Investment Act of 2015. Nikki, I'm not sure if Nikki, through your chair, Ms. Nikki Kriya is the one that is going to present on this legislation. Just want to find out if she is on the platform to take the committee through this. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DDG. And thank you, Acting Chairperson, and good morning to all of the honourable members. As indicated, I'll be taking the committee through the Protection of Investment Act. I'll be very short, Acting Chairperson, in the interest of time. The investment policy landscape is changing globally, and both developing and developed countries are either undertaking reviews or have reviewed the investment framework as to provide an environment that facilitates investment while ensuring that governments are able to regulate in the public interest. The Protection of Investment Act is the outcome of a comprehensive review that was undertaken by the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition on the South African Investment Framework. The Act was signed into law on 15 December 2015. Subordinate regulations that dealt with mediation rules were subsequently prepared and promulgated, and the Act was then assented to by proclamation. Both the Act and the regulations simultaneously commenced on the 13th of July 2018. The objectives of the Act is really to clarify the standards of legal protections for all investors. So it's both foreign investors and domestic investors. Contains provisions that you would ordinarily find in investment treaties, and the main aim was to ensure that it's consistent with the South African Constitution and legal framework, and it reaffirms the government's commitment to maintain an open, transparent environment for investment. It adds no new obligations on investors. It ensures, very importantly, that there's a balance between the rights and obligations of investors and that and the government, and the right to regulate of the government in the public interest. It encourages investors to align their activities to support South Africa's national economic development and socio-economic transformation objectives. It provides that investors may seek protection of their investment in any competent South African court, statutory body, or independent tribunal under the Arbitration Act. And importantly, it provides a dispute avoidance mechanism in terms of the mediation that I was speaking about, where investors may raise their concerns with any decision that is taken by a government or a government agency for amicable resolution without resorting to legal challenge. The provisions of the Act, notably, as I said, include some provisions that aligns with the South African Constitution. So there's provision for expropriation and compensation that are aligned with South Africa's constitutional requirements. It provides for fair administrative action and then confirms that any action that should be taken, that is taken by government, should be lawful, reasonable, and procedurally fair. And it also ensures that investors can take actions taken by government to the domestic courts, and where provided for arbitration under the Arbitration Act. It, as I said, provides for mediation to avoid disputes. And just to confirm that to date, since the implementation of the Act, we have not received any specific request for mediation by any investor. The Act has been in operation for about four years. There's no difficulties that have been encountered in terms of the implementation and operation of the Act, and should any transpire, the need for a review will then be considered. So say that in short, the Protection of Investment Act that is in operation, in full operation. Thank you.
From Nikki's presentation, then we go to the legal metrology by Dr. Shenge Dimana.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DDG. Thanks to honorable members for inviting us. So the context of legal metrology. Legal metrology is part of metrology. It's one of the three parts of legal metrology. It's one of the three parts of metrology. Legal metrology focuses on requirements, regulatory requirements that are placed on measuring instruments. This is to ensure that the measuring instruments or the measurements that are taken are as accurate as is required. So the Legal Metrology Act that we are responsible for with the National Regulator for Compulsory Specification was developed to make sure that departments and government entities that may have regulatory requirements for measuring instruments are regulating as appropriately or as well as they could. If there are gaps, then the NRCS will be able to assist. So the essence of what is done in legal metrology is that regulations are developed, and in terms of those regulations, the instruments, measuring instruments, will be approved or type approved. Then there will be market surveillance inspections, as well as verification that inspectors will go out and make sure that the instruments that are on the market can measure as is required. And if they are not approved, then they will remove them from the market. So in order to develop the regulations, there is consultations that have to take place with stakeholders. As I've indicated, there are departments and entities that also have a role in this space. So they have to be consulted, and we have to determine if there are any gaps that we can play a role in. So consultations were undertaken with the South African Local Government Association in connection with the electricity and water meters that some of us may know that municipalities and their citizens sometimes have challenges with measurements of meters. Also, consultations were held with the Road Traffic Corporation, Management Corporation, to determine needs of measuring devices that traffic law enforcement officers use. There were also a lot of consultations with the South African Bureau of Standards, with the business associations, and with other regulators as it's necessary. We can go to the next one. So in terms of the progress, I think members will be aware, honourable members will be aware that the NRCS have been implementing this. So far, we have managed to develop interim measures. So in order to develop regulations, the process is to start with interim measures. And with interim measures being implemented, we can then see what is required. And once we are satisfied, then it's brought to the minister for the minister to gazette. So 10 interim measures have been developed so far. In this case, I'm just reporting the few that are the most recent that have been developed. I know that members have seen this before. They have seen the 10 that have been developed before, or the 6, because I'm giving you 4. So there's multi-dimensional instruments, devices that weigh well at the same time, the size, the dimension of the object. Such devices are used for freight measurements and loads that are on trucks, etc. There's also traffic speed measurements. Interim measurements have been developed there. There are various devices that are used for measuring speed by law enforcement officers. This include radar, laser, cameras, etc. There's also the E-Tag, which is the system of classifying vehicles at open road tolling points. And this system then allows you to determine what is the size of the vehicle that is being measured, and compare that to the costs that have been set for traveling on that road. Then there's evidential breath analyzers. These devices measure blood alcohol content, especially for motorists, so that
drunk driving can be reduced. So on, we're moving on. There are about 9 devices that are being considered for development of interim measures. We have electricity energy meters. These are the ones that municipalities use, as well as machines and dynamic fluid measurement system. This measure other fluids other than water. And so there are 9 that are being considered. These are the most important. Can we move on to the next slide? So in conclusion, the NRC has managed to develop a number 10 in measure, interim measures. And so far, the NRC has not proposed yet to the department for gazetting any of these and to become regulations. Once the NRCS is satisfied, they will come through to the department. So for the department, we'll continue to work with the NRCS to ensure that the act is implemented fully. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. That is the presentation from the department.
Okay. No, thank you very much. I think now we are done. Thank you very much for the presentation, department. Honorable members, now is our time to engage the presentation. I'll see by the show of hands and notes, honorable members who want some clarity seeking questions or and comments, so that we are able to discuss and have a way forward. I can see Honorable Zuwaku, number 1.